We are no longer the knights who say knee.
Shh.
Getting better.
We are the knights of episode number 26 of the Retro Rewind podcast.
Retro Rewind podcast initialized. Mission identified. Monty Python and the Holy Grail, 1975. Co-hosts online. Auditory analysis online. All systems nominal.
Welcome to the Retro Rewind podcast, where we look at movies and video games from 15 or more years ago and let you know whether they're still worth revisiting today. You can find the show notes for this episode at retrorewindpodcast.com/RRP26. And there you can write a comment whether you liked the episode. You can vote in our poll on whether or not you thought Monty Python and the Holy Grail was a classic or second class. And you can also subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and more. My name is Francisco Ruiz. I am a dad, a designer, and a disliker of some movies.
What?
Hint, hint, possibly. And I am joined, as always, by my good friend and co-host, Paul Bowers. Welcome, Paul.
Hello. Hey, Francisco. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary to you too, Paul. Yes, it is our 26th episode, which, since we release bi-weekly, that makes it 1 year that the Retro Rewind podcast has been on the air.
Or quarter, because bi-weekly can mean every other week or twice a week.
Thank you, Sheldon. All right. We are going to forego the question, Paul. And actually, as we introduce our guest hosts, when I introduce you, please go ahead and say your name and whether you thought Monty Python and the Holy Grail was a classic or second class, as are your prediction. So, Paul, let's start with you.
My prediction?
Yes.
Just want to clarify. Okay, classic.
All right, and we are joined by my lovely wife, Christy.
Hello. Apparently, I'm supposed to say my name, so now it's been said twice. My name is Christy. And the prediction is classic.
Thank you. And we are also joined by Josh the Riffer Powers.
Yes, hello. Or Josh Powers, yes. I'm supposed to say my name too, apparently. And classic.
Awesome. And also joining us is Sharon the Rockstar Powers.
Hello, I'm Sharon Powers. And I predicted it would be a classic because, you know.
Because you just know it's going to be a classic. Except for me, who thought it was going to be second class.
That's what I
predicted. All right.
Awesome. Is that why you're the disliker of some movies?
Yes, exactly. So thank you all for joining us. This is going to be a new format. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know we typically only have one guest host. But we are going to see how it goes with tres co-hosts, or guest hosts, excuse me.
Should have said it in French.
Nope.
With an outrageous French accent.
Exactly.
Paul, will you please tell us what our course is going to be today?
We're going to have a roundtable discussion of whether we thought Monty Python and the Holy Grail is a classic or second class, and we're going to go into the YouTube segment after that, possibly, and wrap it up with feedback, contact info, and some show announcements.
Very cool. Alice, whenever you have the target locked in, please let us know.
Alert, alert, target located. Spoilers incoming. Engaging Retro Rewind Reactor.
Cave is guarded by a creature so foul, so cruel, that no man yet has fought with it and lived. Bones of 450 men lie strewn about its lair. So, brave knights, if you do doubt your courage or your strength, come for death awaits you all. Danger. Death. Eternal peril.
Okay, Monty Python and the Holy Grail came out on May 25th of 1975 in the United Kingdom. It was rated PG and it runs 91 minutes long. It was directed by Terry Gilliam and Terry Jones. The writers are of the general Monty Python crew and starred Graham Chapman as King Arthur, the voice of God. I better not read all these credits, but basically also stars John Cleese, Eric Idle, Terry Gilliam, Terry Jones, Michael Palin, Connie Booth, Carol Cleveland, and all the rest of the Monty Python cast.
You said you weren't going to read them all.
No, not in all their roles that they played. It was countless roles. The budget for this was about $365,000 and gross to about $127 million worldwide. So good on them.
Include re-releases? Because I think it might.
I don't know.
That can't be the initial run though, because the first comedy to break $100 million was in the 80s, and I think that was Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield. So,
well, maybe they're doing it in pounds,
so. Or maybe inflation. Inflation.
Perhaps. Oh yeah, it could be that too. Yeah,
maybe. But, maybe if we knew what the meaning of life was.
Nicely done.
Regardless, it made more than it cost to make, so that's what matters. Very cool. Thank you for sharing this, Paul. Now, let's get into what we loved and or liked about this movie. And let's start with Sharon.
One of my favorite things about the movie is the credits. I adore the credits.
The opening credits?
Yes. In high school, I first saw it in high school, and, while other people were, doodling on their papers about who they had a crush on, I was doodling about Ralph the Wonder Llama.
Alrighty.
Nice. Yeah.
Now, there are multiple llamas in that, so why did you fixate on Ralph? I'm curious.
He's the Wonder Llama. He was the leader of the pack.
The alpaca.
Well, he's obviously stands out from the rest of the llamas.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to wreck it.
Wow. Okay.
He was outstanding in his field.
Wow, that was well done.
Thank you. Awesome. Don't seem so surprised.
All right, Paul, what was something you really loved about the movie?
I like the music, the theme, not in the credits, but as they were galloping along. Dun, 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 that one.
I completely agree. That was one of the things that I was very pleasantly surprised with the music and how memorable it was after watching it.
Yeah, good adventurous theme there.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
That only other movies wish they had something that good.
So simple.
Except for anything by John Williams. I'm sure they don't wish that.
Well, even some of them. Not all, but some.
All right.
Like Schindler's List wishes they had that kind of thing.
Oh my gosh. Too soon, Paul.
Schindler's Wish List?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Nice. Nice, Josh. Christy, what was something you loved about the movie?
So many things. I just love the quotability of it, the back and forth between you and a friend that also memorized parts of the movie, the random lines you can drop into conversation and then find a connection with somebody else. I, I don't know. No, I just think it's really... And you see it in other... There's a VeggieTales where there's French French peas. And they talk about their French accent. And they just find it sprinkled throughout culture.
Yes.
Definitely. I do want to say that one of the things, just since you mentioned that, I like the French castle guard, and I thought he was pretty funny. But I think I liked him especially because VeggieTales bases their peas on the French guy from this movie.
As any French guy in any movie is based on nowadays. With their outrageous French accents.
Oh. Is based on Monty Python?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
That's just my stupid opinion. I mean, my personal opinion, sorry.
I was going to say, I don't think it's necessarily...
Oh, that's harsh.
Are you guys brothers or something? Jeez. All right.
Put up with me for too long.
Josh, let's... what's something you really liked or loved about Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
One thing?
Yes, we're just doing one thing, and then we'll go back around the pike.
Okay, I enjoyed the comedy. So, one thing...
So specific.
Yes. The something that I noticed on this rewatching it was the callbacks. There are, callbacks from different things that I didn't really pick up. Like, I never realized how many cats were in the making of the movie. It was just every once in a while, you know, there's something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You remember the whole skits, but then they kind of bleed into each other, too, with these echoes, and I really like that.
Yeah, it was kind of a nice way to knit things together.
Yeah, like how King Arthur would always say five when he meant three. That was through several parts of the movie.
Yep.
Well, there's one main skit for that, but it comes up in other parts. So
yes, that's what's called a callback.
Yes. And speaking of callbacks, I guess the one that I enjoyed, though, is kind of set up kind of early on was the swallow carrying the coconut. And how
African or European?
Well, whatever. But I liked how that just the way the opening guard was like saying, "How can you talk about this swallow carrying this coconut?" And he just like
be quiet.
But he just kept after it, which was interesting because a lot of the humor that was like that throughout this movie, I did not care for. But that opening one, I really liked.
Huh. So. You should not be leading this podcast.
But the swallow, the swallow was definitely a callback that came out throughout. Which so
see the violence inherited in the system.
Are you quoting Matrix at me?
Oh yeah.
No, that's Monty Python.
Oh. See, folks,
this movie. That is a classic line from this movie.
Thank you.
Someone just got incepted.
Nice, Paul. Nice. Let's go to Paul now. What was something that you really liked about the movie? Oh, or something else, I should say.
Somebody?
I'm just picking whatever random word I want to.
Oh. Teacher's pet here, I guess.
Yes, Paul.
Actually, I was going to go with a vague thing, like my brother said comedy. I will go with the dialogue.
The dialogue? Is something you really liked?
Paul's answer was yes.
No, but some of the you had the funny lines in there, and some of it was like stupid humor, which is funny. But you had some very good dialogue and arguments, like at the beginning when he's talking about the argument of the swallows. Or I especially loved the whole argument between King Arthur and the peasants digging through the mud about the way a government system should be set up.
That was hilarious.
You can have that opinion, sure.
Yes. You don't like my opinion? Don't worry. It's getting better.
I said you can have that opinion, certainly.
Oh, don't worry. It'll be soon dead in a moment.
Josh, how about you?
Another thing I liked was the movie.
The brothers' powers keeping things vague. Nice.
Well, it's a vague question. Well, no, it's a specific question with a vague answer. Okay. Well, kind of like what Paul was saying, I really enjoyed understanding those jokes about an unladen swallow or an autonomous collective, because as a kid it was just like it was funny because they were just kind of going off on it and you get the spirit of the joke.
Mm-hmm.
But as an adult, it's like I actually follow what they're saying. What they're saying is it's much richer, and it's like they're actually bringing up a good point. And so it's the whole nature of being pedantic in medieval times.
Okay. Well put. Christy, what was something else you really liked?
I like the skit about the witch. This isn't my nose, it's a false one.
A witch!
She turned me into a newt. A newt. I just love that one. That was, I don't know, maybe it's memories of me and my friend quoting it in college back and forth, but just randomly dropping in the conversation. She turned me into a newt.
It was.
Watch.
Oh, go ahead, Paul.
Go ahead. I was just going to say the line.
His favorite line.
Go ahead, Paul.
Well, she turned me into a newt.
Exactly. I got there. Meta.
That's all I was going to say.
Oh, okay. I was going to comment that I did like how the sort of progression of how the knight, I forget his name, was saying how a witch can float like wood. What else floats like wood? Oh, a duck. Okay, let's.
You like the that's so funny.
I thought that was interesting. I thought he was trying to save her. I thought he was trying to because. I thought she would weigh
science, clearly.
Logically.
Logically. You have to hold up your little visor when you do that.
No, I liked it. Your
problem is you thought too much.
Yes, that is one of my chief problems.
But that's actually where a lot of the humor comes from, is character.
Yeah. No, he tries to figure it out so that it can make sense.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Sharon, what was something else you really liked about the movie?
Oh, yeah. My answer is also yes. But
yes, as in the whole movie?
No, just but yes.
I was always very partial to the Swamp Castle scene. My brother and I would enact that one a lot.
Which one is that?
Huge tracts of land.
Oh, thank you.
The curtains!
All this will be yours.
The curtains!
No, not the curtains.
But mother!
Father.
Father! I don't want land!
But...
It's like watching the movie all over again. I love it.
I mean, that part's fine, but isn't it sad that Lancelot just comes in and mows down all those people for no reason?
But it's funny because when he goes in, he realizes that he did. He goes, oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry.
It's just when I'm in this idiom, I get so carried away.
But...
Oh, and he attacks a flower.
Yeah, he does.
Terribly sorry.
Why did he miss that? But...
Oh, no.
And then he thought that he was coming to rescue a damsel in distress, and then it turns out to be Herbert. And so he's really like, well,
let's not jump to conclusions.
And you know what? What's weird? I didn't actually follow that at first. I thought it said in the note that it was a prince that he was saving, and...
No, it just said, help me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you like the Swamp Castle. Okay, cool.
About a note.
Something else. Let's see. Trying to think of something else I really liked. I did like how Arthur at the end turned the question around on the old man before he is able to cross the bridge. I thought that was very smart to do that. I don't know if that was intentional on his part, but yes, it also used the callback of the swallow.
I would consider that something I noticed. I would call that kind of the climax of the movie.
Yeah, I was surprised it went on after that, but yeah.
After an intermission.
I thought about this a lot, and it's the movie, there's a series of skits with callbacks.
Yeah.
But the very first joke, essentially, with as far as the brunt of the humor is the question of an unladen swallow, and it's kind of the last one too. And it's like King Arthur has learned his learned how to cope with these
it's
mad
his
people.
Grail.
It's his grail. I like
oh,
that.
Interesting.
He found
yeah.
Grail.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Huh.
You'll make friends but with I like this movie if you keep talking like that.
Well, despite the written scene where they find that didn't get filmed, where they find the grail in a London department store.
Oh, nice. I'm glad they didn't film it.
Wow. But this could I like this grail better, the metaphorical grail.
That is one of my favorite parts too, Francisco.
And I think that's that's probably the most memorable and of the running gags of the movie. And I think it's because of that reason.
Probably
is that it's the one that you take with you. You start with it and you end it, and the characters embrace it by the end.
Mm-hmm. Well put. Are there any other things any of you guys would like to put well about things you loved or liked about the movie? I'm sure there's a ton. Let's go through at least one more time. Josh, what's something else?
Another scene I liked was every scene.
That's what I was going to say. Well, not every scene, but I want to hear what you say about it.
How about as a kid, Josh?
My favorite part as a kid was, there's two. The monster, because, you know, I love cartoons, or still do love cartoons, and the animator dying. That was just totally my humor.
That was pretty clever, yeah.
Classic.
And the guys who blow trumpets out of their butts.
Not classic.
That's your second favorite scene?
As a kid, those were my favorite scenes.
Nice.
Oh my goodness.
It makes sense as a kid.
They're only his third and fourth favorites.
As an adult, they're my nostalgic favorites.
Okay, gotcha. Cool. Christy, what is something else you really liked about the movie?
I don't know. I already said everything I liked. I liked it. I liked it all.
Cool.
Well, that's a lie. I didn't like it all, but, you know.
Paul, how about you? You liked it all also?
No, I liked Paul.
Well, that's good.
I liked the story structure in the fact that it was basically sketches strung together to tell one story. I like that concept. I thought it was very well done. Each sketch or scene can stand alone as a sketch, but when you put them together, it tells one story. Maybe not complete story, but I like that they were able to succeed in that.
I actually would disagree in a sense. I can talk more about this later if you'd like.
In the what you didn't like?
Go ahead and touch on it, Josh.
Okay. I think that's actually the greatest weakness of the movie.
Is how they strung it together?
Is that it doesn't feel like a whole movie. I mean, most.
Well, that's because they end it.
Even without an ending, it still feels just like a series of sketches, and that's what I appreciated more about the callbacks that kind of really string it together. But if I wanted to watch down and be, you know, feel, you know, get in touch with the human condition kind of thing, this may not be the best movie for that, obviously. But I think that's because it's a skit show. It's a comedy troupe putting on a bunch of skits told loosely with a barely there kind of plot, you know. Kind of reminds me of something like, say, Family Guy's weakest element is that it's a series of jokes loosely tied together by a string plot.
Like all the Monty Python movies.
Well, it's not to say that I don't enjoy what they do with that, but I do think it's it detracts it from being greater than the sum of its parts.
Oh, I disagree. I just think that that's why I like it. Because you can pop it in and play it, focus on the first half and walk away or whatever, you know, skip ahead, go.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, though, is that if you want to sit down and watch it beginning to end,
you can.
You can, but I think it's better in parts, but that was more of my prediction going before, you know, going in. After watching it, it does congeal better than I remember it, but as far as my sitting with the movie as long as it has with me, it's been difficult for me to go back and watch beginning to end.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. Something else I really liked about the movie was Robin, who doesn't seem to get a whole lot of play outside his singular sketch, but I did like how he goes up to the three-headed guy who's arguing with himself. And I really liked how he's arguing with himself, and then when he finally gets back to Robin, Robin's gone. I thought that was really clever that he just like went around him, essentially. Though I didn't like how he didn't sort of own that decision. He kept sort of denying it. No, I wasn't. I didn't.
His character.
Apparently, what's not obvious, like I always think that he just went on. Like, you know, you see that he's gone, so you think he just walked on by.
Yeah.
That's what I wish happened, but the way the minstrel's singing, he just turned around.
Yeah.
Like he went back the other direction. And when he meets up with King Arthur later, you get that that is what happened because he said, have you given up your quest?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I didn't catch that either. So.
Robin ran away.
Well, he ran away.
I thought he said like he ran away from the fight.
So
he continued on in the road, but yeah, ran that's away what from I thought the too. Fight.
What sealed it for me, though, was when he met up with King Arthur later, he said, you know, like, it was as if he was backtracking because... You know, he's like, have you given up on your quest for the Grail?
Gotcha. Yeah, it makes sense.
He's making excuses again, so.
Well, in that case, I'd like that part less now.
You're just trying to fall in love with the characters that shouldn't be falling in love with.
Anyway.
It still has a Bugs Bunny element to it. It's the most Bugs Bunny style kind of comedy in the whole.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's I think, a good way of putting it, yes.
That's how you should just think of this. Just think of Bugs Bunny... And then maybe you'll like it a little bit more.
But you know, I don't. The only sketch I liked in Bugs Bunny was Roadrunner and the Coyote.
That's all. Not
in Bugs Bunny, in Looney Tunes, I mean.
Okay. Oh wow. All right. Next.
Yeah. Next, Sharon. Why don't you close us out with something you really like? Either the pinnacle of what you liked about this movie, or just if you already talked about that, something else you liked.
I two of my favorite things that wasn't coming to mind earlier, but they are things I love dearly about the movie.
Yes.
Are the monks who chant and then hit themselves with their sacred tablets.
Okay.
Do you know what they chant?
Yes.
Dona eis requiem. No.
Piesu domine.
Yeah, but do you know what it means?
Yes, it means
sympathy for Jesus.
Sweet Jesus. Gracious Lord Jesus, may they rest. Something to that effect.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I thought maybe they were going to do, I didn't know what it meant, and I thought maybe it meant something funny.
Yeah, I would think they'd hide a joke in something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe the joke,
typical Latin chant.
Which makes the joke work better if you don't know it.
Yeah. It just sounds like your typical thing a monk would chant.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I loved so dearly is Patsy. Just his expression the whole time.
You know, Patsy.
Who's Patsy?
Part of King Arthur. He's King Arthur's
horse.
Horse.
Oh,
sound.
The coconut guy. Okay.
And he has one line in the whole movie.
It's only a model.
Darn it, model.
that was funny. I did like that he said that.
Expression.
Little known fact about his character, he was actually had a larger part and kind of was the most self-aware character in the movie, kind of breaking down the fourth wall a lot, but got reduced down to...
It's only a model.
Okay, yeah. That just adds a whole nother level of frustration for me, Josh. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second.
Let's see how frustrated we can make Francisco.
Before we get to the things, thank you, by the way, Sharon, for sharing that. Before we move on to the things we didn't like about this movie, though,
which will feature Francisco.
Which will feature Francisco. And in supporting roles, everyone else. some Facebook comments we got, which is a lot of love for this movie, which is great. Pearl Hurst said, as the proud owner of the collector's edition, AJ Hurst will be all over this one like white on rice. So I hope you enjoy listening to this episode, AJ. Jim McMillan said, just watched it again a few days ago. We'll always remember laughing our butts before the credits were even done in the theater back when it was brand new. Run away! Angela Ray says, come back here. I'll bite your leg off. And Lionel Jensky says, love that movie. I stopped being a fan of British comedy after Monty Python and Benny Hill. Excuse me. They just stopped being funny after that. The Coconut.
I would recommend Fawlty Towers if they stopped there.
Oh, okay.
Which stars John Cleese. It is not as well known in America, and if I can just give that shout out, stars John Cleese and his then wife Connie Booth, who played the witch.
Oh, and, the non-witch witch, or I guess yeah, the non-witch witch.
It's a great. It's some of the best British humor. If you're like, oh, those were only two good things, I would highly recommend checking that out.
And that was Fawlty Towers?
Fawlty Towers. John Cleese runs a hotel, and it's hilarious.
Okay. I've seen that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Does he, like, swallow a fish named Wanda by any chance? Anyway.
Maybe not 10 years later.
They just... So this is the continuation of Lionel's comment. The coconuts have to be my favorite prop in the flick. And then Sharon Powers, who you're hearing currently, said, Ralph the Wonder Llama. And Clinty, this will forever be an us movie to me. I'm curious, is that your brother, Sharon?
That's my brother.
Okay, cool. And then two more. Michael Kelsos from the Retro Thought Pod said, if you don't rate this one a classic, I may just stop listening to the show. Ha ha, not really. But I may say, neat. And then Tim Ebach says, will not risk another frontal assault. That rabbit's dynamite. This is one of the funniest movies ever. I say classic. So thank you, everyone, for sharing your thoughts and memories of this movie on Facebook. And now... let's go on to the things we didn't like about Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Yes, okay. I know you may not like this section, but what did you not like about, or what did you flat out hate about Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
The ending. It's probably the worst ending. Because
it didn't make any sense, right?
Well, get it as an adult, as the historian is talking about, you know, what happened there, and then some knight comes along and then kills him, and they're investigating his homicide, and then all of a sudden they just end the movie. Like, that's it.
I thought that was hilarious.
Well,
I found it very unfulfilling.
And you know what? I'd have to agree with you. And this is probably me overthinking it, but did they like open up some sort of time loop where this historian is talking about the castle and then a knight comes in and then like as the rest of the movie progresses, they're moving into the modern time where the police are able to catch up with them?
I think it's more
about breaking the fourth wall, like having the historian there, and in a sense that did kind of break their time space universe kind of thing in the story structure sense, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of collapsed under its own weight.
Kind of making the fourth wall not another character, but part of
the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's funny. You see Lancelot getting patted down and you're like, what the junk? What? That's, oh my gosh.
It's definitely like, it's definitely a joke that I appreciate and respect even. But kind of going off what I was saying before of how it doesn't feel like a whole movie, I think that is the biggest culprit of that. That's just kind of the emotion. There's no closure. Again, going off what I was saying before, I think Airplane did it better as far as having characters and having more emotion and you get a satisfying ending. So I think that, and it's definitely a series of skits, but it's more of a movie than a skit show. And yeah. as a movie, it works better. Just mm-hmm. kind of contrast it with something that works better. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I don't like, is that it. I wish it were more fulfilling. The end credits being the biggest.
Yeah,
go
ahead, Sharon.
I think they wanted it to be unfulfilling in that way. I mean, I think they did that.
That was a choice, and that's why I respect it. Yeah. But it doesn't necessarily mean I enjoy it.
Right. Yeah.
I agree with you, Christy, that it is funny. I get the joke, but I also agree with my brother that it's an unsatisfying ending, at least for me.
Well, if
but
it
helps, I understand.
Go.
What?
I was going to say, well, if it helps you feel better, this was the only second time I've ever seen the entire thing all the way through. I would never, ever watch it all the way through. I would just watch my favorite skits and then move on because I didn't want to watch the rest of it. It didn't, at the time, it didn't make sense, or I didn't think it was that funny, or I would just get bored and I'm like, the story's done now. Okay, I know what happens. So.
Very fair. But so would you also agree that it may not quite work as a movie, like a standard story arc movie?
Well, I already said that I agree to that.
And, you know, I
guess I didn't.
And also, it makes sense, though, because they are a skit. You know, this was their second movie that they made. Their first one was, you know, and now for something completely different, which was literally a movie of them doing all their best skits from the TV show.
Oh, okay.
And they made the movie in between seasons. So you can actually kind of see this progression slowly going towards a more movie style kind of thing, a more feature film kind of stuff. And this is kind of maybe a transition period.
Oh, okay. Interesting. And that makes sense that this shows a little bit more like they are trying to make more of a movie as opposed to, it sounds, I haven't seen any other Monty Pythons except for the, what is it? I came into this place looking for an argument, but you're putting me down or something like that.
Yeah. Did you actually watch that, or do I just quote it to you?
No, you've made me watch it.
What about the dead parrot? Sorry, this isn't Monty Python. I think I made you watch the dead parrot skit too.
Oh, okay. I don't remember. But all that to say, I've seen very little,
scoff,
very little Monty Python. And
but I think that's great for this conversation. You know, if we all have the same opinion, it'd be one thing. I'm very fascinated. So you had never seen it before, right?
I'd seen the movie once. I've seen Holy Grail once in middle school. That'd been my only other time I've seen it. And then this other completely different sketch that Christy really liked I've seen of Monty Python in general.
Gotcha.
One thing I do want to get back to, though, is the whole breaking the fourth wall concept. You brought up that, what is his name, Sharon?
Patsy.
Patsy? Yeah. That says, it's just a model. And I thought that was one of the funniest parts. And I thought, I mean, because that's really breaking the fourth wall. The whole Scotland Yard trying to investigate the knights. I thought that just seemed like more of a different story that they're trying to throw in there, as opposed to if they're talking about like the three-headed knights, that's just three guys in one suit. It's stuff like that would have been more breaking the fourth wall stuff, which I would have enjoyed so much more than.
Well, that's why I say it's almost like, you know, they kind of, it's like a type of breaking the fourth wall that's still, it's not breaking the fourth wall with the audience. It's it's like they forged a fourth wall with reality.
Gotcha.
The way I took it.
Yeah, there's different ways. You can turn to the audience, or you can just, you know, you can play with certain aspects within the movie.
Well, like, it's only a model line. Patsy isn't actually telling the audience that. He's just kind of saying it to
King
the knights.
Arthur, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah.
But you're talking about, like, the pure deconstructive nature of we're in a movie kind of element.
Yeah, yeah. That type of stuff I get a kick out of, and I would have appreciated more of that. So you saying that Patsy was supposed to be in it more, that was like, oh, that's why it frustrated me so much, because I would have, well, I guess if he is in it more doing stuff like that, it'd be frustrating. I don't know what else he would have been doing.
You have a very, very particular type of humor that you like, and any divergent from that Is that the right way to? Whatever. Yeah. I sound smart. Yeah.
Well, I would say that's more of the school of Mel Brooks. So it's different styles. You would find in Mel Brooks,
and he loves Mel Brooks.
Yes, I do.
He loves those movies. But you add anything else that might be different, and if you add in the cultural aspect, because there's jokes in there that we may not understand, and there's the accent barrier that may bother you subconsciously or whatever. But you just have like this big hang up, and you think about it, and then you think about it some more, and then you think about it even more, and then you try really hard to make it all go like it has to feel like Lord of the Rings. Oh my God. Or else it's not valid.
I don't get hung up on those accents in Lord of the Rings at all.
In contrast, you're thinking about this so much, you didn't fall asleep.
I did. That's true. I didn't fall asleep.
I would have kicked him in the face.
But yeah, I mean, it's probably been very obvious by now, but yeah, this movie was not made for Francisco Ruiz. It just was not.
Did you enjoy it as a middle schooler?
No.
How do you not? There are just so many hilarious lines you can sit and quote. And you memorized Al Yankovic and what other things? Clue, the movie Clue, you memorized that? Like, this isn't good enough for you?
A double negative.
If you kind of grew up with it, that would be one thing.
Maybe, yeah. And I wish I could put my finger on exactly what it is about it that I don't like. I think the idea that I just think too much about it and I want it to make a lot more sense than it does, I think that's probably the best reason why I don't like it. I certainly appreciate and totally respect other people, like all of you, for liking it and enjoying it. That's totally fine, and I'm not trying to say you shouldn't or anything like that. It's just not something that it doesn't strike any chords with me.
Well, can I ask a general question?
Sure.
Wow, Paul, where were you on that one?
Sorry, I was thinking about what else I didn't like about the movie.
Yeah, we'll get back to this stop being the Francisco show, but go ahead and ask your question.
I was just wondering, like, we talked about the end credits and not being fulfilling and stuff. I just wondered, was there any skits in particular that, like, didn't work at all? The best that I can think of it, like,
yes.
The Castle Anthrax.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate that one.
Spank us anyway. Yeah.
I think that, go ahead.
I was going to say that was just like, okay, I didn't realize, especially as a middle schooler, and not even till we started this conversation, I didn't realize this was supposed to be, even though Christy kind of said this, it didn't dawn on me that this was essentially a bunch of sketches pieced together. I thought it was trying to be a full movie.
Well, that's probably why you don't like it.
And now if I took singular sketches out of context, I may find more funny elements within them. But certainly that I didn't find anything funny in that. Some of the other ones I didn't. The other one that I really didn't like was, one other one that I didn't really like was the one where Arthur is by the peasants that are talking about the government. You brought that up as something you really liked, Paul. I was totally with King Arthur, but just shut up, dude. I get it. You don't like whatever I'm bringing.
But
okay.
He says it like.
No, but the peasant has a good point. Like, just because some watery tart throws a sword at you doesn't make you the king.
Well, yeah, that's fine. But King Arthur's like, okay, yeah, okay, okay. He didn't want to keep arguing. He just wanted to go about his business.
Wow.
Then walk. If you want to go about your own business, then the average person would just walk away.
Well, yeah, he should have done that. I don't know why he didn't do that.
Oh, I'm surprised you didn't relate to King Arthur then, just telling him to shut up, or at least usually in like the kind of comedic scenarios, you have somebody to relate to.
Enjoy the skit of the dead parrot then? I guess you didn't remember. It's just basically saying a dead parrot of 50,000 different ways, and that's what that skit reminded me of. I mean, saying different things, but he's saying it like they're all traveling the different paths, but getting in the same place.
Yeah.
That makes it funnier for me whenever I'm listening to it, because it's like, how many different ways can you say a lady in a lake threw a sword at you. Like, and then I don't know.
Or how many ways can you tell how government is built?
Yeah, exactly.
Or supreme executive power mandated by the masses.
And you know what, guys? That's probably a skit that if I just took it out of context, just on its own, and watched it a few times, I could probably find humor in that. And there are some skits like that, where with that one and the one with the three-headed guys I liked, and then I think the one with Merlin, where they, or not Merlin, but Tim.
Tim the Enchanter?
Yeah, Tim the Enchanter. Those were some of them where if I watched them on their own a few times, I think I would have found them funny. Because I felt myself smiling during parts of those, but certainly nothing made me out and out laugh.
Yes, in the beginning it did. You chuckled.
That out of context comment made me remember the criticism I've heard most from the few times of people I've met who haven't enjoyed it. They seem to enjoy quoting or hearing other people quote the movie rather than the movie itself.
Yeah. I'm definitely getting a kick out of you guys quoting.
Yeah. And that's what's so bizarre to me is that like every other piece of pop culture that people quote, it's all like, oh, it's over my head, I don't get it kind of thing. Uh-huh. And this is the only thing I can think of where people kind of outside of the loop enjoy what's going on without being inside the loop.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, totally.
So I think it's kind of a phenomenon in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I have something else I don't like.
Yeah, go ahead.
I hate the scene where they make God in the clouds, that cartoon part.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I despise that. I've always despised that just because it feels so sacrilegious and it just makes me... I mean, I understand it. I understand where they're coming from. I understand why they put it in there. And I'm sure for people who don't hold high regard for their relationship with Christ might find it like funny, but I find it, I don't know, aggravating and annoying. Mm-hmm. And I used to always skip over that and the Castle of Anthrax.
Quit groveling.
What'd you say? I missed that.
I always felt the same way. And I still do to a point, but, I'm not watching it. Yesterday I just appreciated it a lot more, I guess.
I think, yeah.
Maybe because,
an adult, you're tempered.
It is, isolated. It is really sacrilegious. I mean, of course, God loves his psalms, but genuine repentance. But, of course, it's making fun of when people are either, just overdoing it and not actually changing themselves and just constantly groveling.
And I think,
the people who go or, who just weep all the time and don't actually take any action.
And I think that's obviously it's going to be dependent on your views of God.
Right.
Whereas, and the comedy, that comedy element works is that it's based on some kernel of truth. So if if it's not funny, that's at least the way I see it. It's not as funny because of my own personal views. It's like, well, the truth is kind of being missed. It's not based on something. It's based on kind of misconception or just kind of a stand up of the wrong thing kind of
I just think it continuously sends the message that God, even if it is a joke, that God isn't personal and doesn't like all he wants to do is stand up in the clouds and yell at you and shake his finger at you.
And it's false and incorrect.
It's just one more thing. Like if it was,
you're right. It was one more thing.
Well, stop. But I mean, about when it comes to Christianity in general, like you can't, people say, well, what religion are you? I don't feel like I could say I'm a Christian because what are they going to think of the Monty Python God coming down out of the heavens and shaking his finger at you? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. But, well, I would like to counterpoint that for just a moment. I'm not saying that everything that God did and everything in that was uplifting or reverent, but there are times in life where I wish God would show himself like in the clouds, just like where we could talk to him face to face. And I always picture that scene in my head when I think that.
Your question of what would you accept as proof of God for or somebody asked that, you would say
exactly
and Holy Grail. That should be enough for everyone, don't you think?
Nice.
Look, I mean, look up in the sky, boom, there you go. He's right there.
I mean, he's got the crown, he's everything.
Yeah.
Just to sort of cap off that, I mean, that is just another element in a long string of elements I didn't really care for about this movie. Though I guess I have the line has been drawn even higher or lower, depending on how you think about it, by like South Park with God as a spaghetti monster and a rat or something like that, where it's so sacrilegious that this didn't really faze me, but I can totally see why it would be a sort of jarring. From
I used to watch this movie all the time with my friends in Bible school, so like
it was just like
one of those things where like
it reminds us as Christians to make fun of ourselves too and kind of check ourselves, and are we coming across this way, or are we treating God this way, you know. I that's part of what I appreciated about it.
Yeah, totally,
a different perspective.
Yeah.
Is there any skits, any other skits that, I think for me, all the other skits, if I can change the subject back to the...
By all means.
Other skits that didn't work, every other skit for me worked. It really was those two as well for me.
You're wrong, but Paul, yeah, what's...
Burn him anyway!
You think my opinion is wrong? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I have to disagree with you, Francisco, about... one of the scenes that I thought was just mediocre was Tim, the
I agree,
the enchanter. Wow. Because the best line out of the whole thing is, "My name is Tim," you know,
and sharp pointy teeth.
Yeah, those are the only two memorable lines in that whole scene, and with the fire going off.
Go ahead.
But there are other scenes that I think that were just kind of pointless. Like they kept going to that. Or they went to that old guy with the bridge, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But beforehand, he was in a hut, and then he disappeared. They were looking for him for direction, you know, where to find the Grail. And it's like, what's the point in that?
Isn't that the kind of the genius of the plot to me, is that whatever happens, what you would have to say, why is this happening? The answer is, they're trying to find the Grail.
Also, it's making fun of various different types of movies, but that, you know, is making fun of the whole, I don't know, quest, Camelot, medieval stories, like
kind of
Merlin.
Mystical
and
I thought you were going to say Yoda disappearing. I was like, but that came afterwards.
Well, no, that's like, that's just kind of, yeah, like a mystical element to the stories.
I think there have been King Arthur, they may not be making fun of, I don't know how many movies of that nature were out at that time. There were a few, I think.
Yeah, but there wasn't.
But also all the stories.
Yeah, to agree with Paul, there is nothing explicit saying why this is happening, why he's there.
Maybe they're thinking they're playing to an educated
audience.
Oh. Maybe they're just trying to string the skits together, and that was just one that they pooped out and was like, here you go. Here's an old guy we have to put at the end. So here you go.
I meant to be in ninth grade, and every time I've seen it since.
Yeah. There's a very non sequitur kind of approach to it. So, and with that, you're going to sacrifice, you know, some of that explicit, or not explicit, exposition. So, yeah. It's kind of the nature of it, Paul.
They assume you're familiar with the King Arthur story because it's just so kind of slapping a glove in the face of every element of the King Arthur story.
That old guy is nothing to do with Merlin, who has a pointy blue hat and vacations in Bermuda. So you make me very sad.
You make me sad.
Sorry, that totally.
Paul.
Yeah, Paul. Jeez, why are we making that so hard, Paul?
If he has to leave for 20 minutes to go hold our daughter while she cries herself back to sleep, you'll know why.
Anyway.
It was so loud.
So we've sort of spun out a lot on the scenes that didn't really work. Were there, I think, Sharon or Christy, were there any, or Christy, you shared a scene you didn't think worked. Sharon, were there any scenes that you didn't think worked? I don't think you've mentioned one.
Not really. I will say, as much as I was cool with the ending for the most part, mm-hmm. I definitely always wanted more. Mm-hmm. But I think that's, you know, I always thought they were kind of making fun of us for wanting more.
Oh, okay.
I always took it. You know, they're like, we know you're expecting an ending and we're just going to cut it here. Yeah. I mean,
I never thought of it like that, that they're making fun of us for wanting more. That's interesting.
I really think that they're doing something like that with it. But, I mean, that, I can't really think of much other than the Castle Anthrax I didn't like. There was, I thought there was a lot funny about it, but I just didn't. I could do without it.
The funniest part, like, I think, speaking of Castle Anthrax, there is one funny part where Lancelot comes in and
you're in terrible peril.
Galahad the chase. It was like, well, maybe we could stay. You know that whole
that was
much too perilous.
You're in terrible peril.
That whole thing.
But you're gay.
In the musical Spamalot, Lancelot is actually they actually kind of take that further and like. That it's kind of implied that he and Herbert have a thing together.
Oh, no.
He and Herbert?
Yeah, the
guy who likes the curtains.
I'm totally thrown. Oh, thank you.
Stop that.
He's going.
You know what else I didn't like?
What else didn't you like, Paul?
That the end scene... Okay, it doesn't make sense that the Frenchmen are at that last castle.
Yes.
But that's funny. It's funny. I will say that. But then this army comes to attack. Where did they get them?
He's even confused about that.
Arthur
says, we're going to attack at once. So Bedivere turns around and draws his sword, starts running, and then all of a sudden he sees behind them as an army. You know,
yeah, where did they come from?
They've been randomly in the movie.
It's kind of funny.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, right before that, it's kind of funny. They're arguing with the Frenchmen and they're throwing stuff at them and they walk away. And then next thing you know, they're walking out of this lake. And it's that armor would have sunk them. Would they walk on the floor of that lake?
they took a boat to it.
Yeah, in a majestic boat.
I think that...
Yeah, that's how they got there, but then they walked back.
But doesn't that play up the joke of being defeated?
Yeah.
Even though, like, it doesn't make sense, but it makes sense as far as...
I know, it increasingly makes less and less sense.
Until the whole thing just ends.
Ends, yes.
I think they were just, like, drunk and unraveling and scribbling things on paper.
Yeah, we gotta get back to our main show, guys. Let's just end this thing.
Oh, on the podcast?
Get on with it.
The movie.
Get on with it.
Oh gosh, that was so odd. I didn't know where she was going with that. And then when all these people said "get on with it,"
I've never seen that scene before yesterday.
Oh really?
Really?
The only time I ever heard the "get on with it" part was towards the was later.
Oh,
when the narrator is going on, and then they yell, "Get on with it." I've never seen that part where she just suddenly starts talking about how much she enjoys the scene.
Yeah. Right, and that's
I think surprised, right?
Well, it reminded me that like the first special edition of the movie came out, that they put that scene back on, but like the very first editions of the movie did not include that scene.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, and we do have this special edition DVD from the library, so
yeah, there's like 10 different special editions.
That was my first gift from
that was my
Valentine's gift.
Yeah, my Valentine's gift.
What's
my
the
Valentine's
special edition
day. Let you know how much Sharon enjoys that movie. I bought her the special edition for Valentine's
so
Day.
So sweet.
And Francisco, I'm gonna buy you a shredder you can put the DVD into.
Well, it's the libraries, no. So I'd owe them money. So thanks a lot, Paul.
Yeah, but at least that'd be one. That would be less people watching it.
Oh, good point. I like this. I like this idea. Chrissy, was there anything else you don't like about the movie?
I didn't understand the part with the sun and the clouds jumping up and down.
Oh, yeah, that didn't make sense.
That was the favorite part.
I think it's funny and weird. Go away. Go away. Bugger off. But I didn't, I was like, okay, thanks for that little, all right. And on to the rest of it.
Yeah, I think drugs were involved somehow.
Well, it's also, that's very much like if you watch the TV show, that's Terry Gilliam's, you know, animation and kind of his humor. But yeah, even as a kid, I was like, maybe I'll understand this as an adult.
And that, nope.
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, I've thought about it a lot and I've thought, you know, it's actually kind of like he was probably just asked, hey, can you just make a scene where there's a sunset so we can transition to night? And that's what he came up with.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Real interpretation.
It always kind of warmed my heart and saddened me at the same time.
That scene or his animation overall? Oh, okay.
That scene.
No, just sadness warms her heart in general.
Yes. No, no.
Very bittersweet.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't agree with him being so rude to the sun and to the weather. But
he was rude.
What about that poor dead shepherd from the fall leaf branch?
always mourned for him.
What?
Always.
Yeah,
mourned.
I don't remember that either.
Oh, sad. No, remember. You are non-fans if you do not remember that guy.
I would agree with that statement. I am not a fan. Paul, was there any last thing that you didn't like about the movie?
None come to mind right now.
Okay. Real quick, I'm curious. Were you a fan of the animations or not?
Me?
Yeah.
Paul?
Yes, Paul.
Okay. I enjoyed it. A lot of it didn't make sense, but I'm a fan of animation.
Okay,
I've seen worse.
That's enough. That's all I need. I didn't care for them, so I was hoping I'd find someone in my corner, but that's okay. Josh, is there something else you didn't like? One more thing.
Something else I didn't like so much. I just thought of it, but it passed. Never mind.
Okay.
It's not real.
It'll come back.
Okay. Well, you're kind of the last one. I think everyone else has said.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. I think the...
Yay.
Yeah,
he missed it.
See, there's so many quotable lines in this.
All right.
He totally missed that. He looked at me like, what? They said, and there was much rejoicing. Yay.
Oh, I just remembered. The low production value.
Yes.
I wish they would have just had a little bit more money.
I thought that was
They had
funnier.
Enough money to build a giant rabbit.
But they didn't have enough money for horses.
Which no, was great.
It worked. It worked. I liked it like for the coconuts, obviously. But there's just some times where it was just like, I wish they would have, you know, there was a little bit more panache to the production.
I don't know. It's only a model.
Yeah, it feels like a very on-the-go independent movie kind of thing. And that, there's a definite charm to that. But at the same time, it's like...
I don't think it would have been as successfully funny if it was overproduced and polished.
Yeah, right. People were trying to take it seriously.
A few things that could have been... you know, like some of the special effects could have been a little better. Like with the
like
knight.
Like what?
But with the Black Knight, you know?
With it being obvious.
Oh, that was great.
That made it funny.
No, it was not.
That made it funny.
The Black Knight scene... Oh my god.
Black
Knight
scene was crap. I don't know what we're talking about.
That's one of the best scenes of all cinema. You're fired.
Oh, okay. I'm fired. Goodbye, guys.
You have to agree with Paul.
All right. This will be my last thing, guys.
That was hilarious.
That's where Gandalf got "You shall not pass" from.
Yeah, that's where. Yes, because Tolkien didn't write that way before this.
He didn't.
Yeah.
Gandalf travels through time. Oh, remember?
He's a time lord.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that whole scene, the special effects of how the arms came off almost in a Velcro fashion with blood spurting was very, low production value. But come on, why is he like, why is he pretending that nothing is wrong with him? And
funny. I finally figured it out, Francisco.
What?
Finally figured out why you don't like this movie.
Lay it on me, Paul.
You just don't get it.
It's true. Oh my gosh. So I want to poke my eyeballs out with knitting needles right now.
Because I don't get it?
Yes. It's so frustrating. It's hilarious. It's okay. That's one of the funniest scenes.
No, it's when he says it's a draw at the end, that's kind of funny. That's a little funny.
It's not funny when he says it's but a flesh wound.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's obviously not. He should be like, well, he should own
it's
up to the fact
real.
That, man, this sucks.
It's
I lost
real.
An arm.
It's
well, I'm still going to go
real.
After you.
It's but not real.
I know it's a movie. It's not real, but it should make some sense.
No, I mean, it's not like you're not supposed to suspend your disbelief and actually buy into the fact that there's a black knight who has four missing limbs and is sitting in the bottom of a forest somewhere going, I'll bite your legs off.
Yeah. Like,
you don't, like, really, you know that his arms are still in there.
No, and I know he's
made
that way.
Why are you trying to make the characters like four dimensional? They're not four dimensional characters.
Hey,
they're not
Francisco.
Yes, Paul.
I have been told in my past that I lack common sense and that I frustrate people sometime in that area.
Okay,
but so I want to thank you for showing me what it's like from other people's point of view.
That's brilliant.
Because I lack common sense?
No, you just
the
don't
opposite.
Get this movie.
Oh, okay.
You to this movie is to me in common sense sometimes.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Got it.
Well,
okay.
I just want to ask about the Black Knight for you, Francisco. It's okay. Like, you see the absurdism as a stand-up of like overcompensating bravado, like somebody who's just kind of a blowhard kind of thing. So there, that the comedy is in there, that's not funny to you? Is that? Recognize that?
I mean, I don't know if I recognize him as having over bravado. It came across as like, no, I feel like he's even said, no, I still have my arms, or no, I'm not wounded. Or
well, yeah, the amount of denial that a person goes through to keep face and show their strength when obviously they're not.
That just hit very poor with me. I thought it would have been much funnier, or at least maybe this is me wanting it to be more of a movie than a series of sketches, but it would have worked for me a lot better if he had like recognized, man, I lost an arm. Well, I'm going to go at you even fiercer.
Why are you making him a hero?
Yeah, you're turning this into an action movie.
Right? It's like you wanted to be Avengers or something. Wait. I've been wounded.
I'm telling you, this is...
I'm going to stand up and save the day.
Well, not... No, because he's the villain. You don't want him to save the day, but that he would...
No, he's not.
He's not a villain.
The hero.
The Black Knight
is? Defending the bridge. He's doing his job.
But I thought...
Wow.
Then why do the knights...
I told you
guys. So are the knights the bad guys?
No.
He's the Black Knight.
He's delusional.
No. Yeah, that's just he's
no villain
Arthur from his path, and that's kind of makes him the villain. But more about the sense of humor. You said he doesn't. You said you wish that he came at him harsher, but doesn't he kind of do that?
Yes.
No. I think the disconnect for me, let me try to say it this way. The disconnect for me is the lack of self-awareness that the Black Knight seems to have.
That's the humor.
Okay, well then I don't like that sense of humor.
And I think we should leave it at that. He doesn't like that sense of humor. It's not going to get more base than that.
Yeah. Hey, Josh.
Yeah.
Do you think this film has a villain in it?
It has
the rabbit
conflict in it, absolutely.
But, no, but like the traditional hero and villain. I can't think of
the French, people.
Yes. Well, no, the French. Okay, yeah.
I would say like anybody who like villain. you have King Arthur who's the main villain, but it kind of reminded me of
he's the main villain.
There's a lot of main hero. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
The main hero, but you actually, how often do you follow his story?
The bunny rabbit and the monster.
That's what I said.
Sorry, go ahead.
So you actually, it's kind of a all I can think of right now is like the Two Towers. It's actually, you know, you have a series of people on different quests, all trying to find the same thing. So you
but
wouldn't.
But there were villains. There was Saruman and.
Saruman.
But so you. The Holy Grail doesn't have one villain, but you have these different characters on these different paths who have separate villains. You have the three-headed monster for Sir...
Well, it's like allegorical stories and whatnot, like Pilgrim's Progress, for instance.
Yeah.
So it's not, other than all evil being the main villain, you have it portrayed in different ways.
Yeah, so you don't have to have a main villain. All you have to have is conflict.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that this quote-unquote story, because I won't call it a full story, doesn't have a main villain. I just found that interesting.
And I think it's more about the, and that's what, like I said before, the genius or ingenious of the nature of the plot is it's so simple. It's just trying to find the Grail, which is absolutely a plot, you know?
So, yeah.
And if it were any more complicated, then yeah, you would probably have to have deeper characters and more spelled out roles. But really, it's just kind of this excuse to tell a bunch of jokes.
Yeah.
Good idea, oh Lord. Of course it's a good idea.
See, can I just watch you guys do the movie? Because I think I'd find that so much more enjoyable.
You just have to think of it as a...
You could probably cut this whole podcast up and recreate the entire movie.
Nice. Okay, I'll do that.
Well, at least the best parts.
Yes. All right, guys. Well, with that, I think we've come to the moment of truth. Alice, do you have a firing solution for us?
Firing solution complete. Rating salvo at the ready. On your mark.
Thank you, Alice. All right, let's start with, who shall we start with this time? Let's start with Christy.
The ladies.
Yes, Christy, how would you rate Monty Python and the Holy Grail? Classic or second class?
I always have caveats when I'm on here, so everybody knows that. All my fans, y'all out there. Anyway, I say classic with the caveat, I always have to add something about whether or not I'd let our daughter watch this, and I would not until she was older. First. Second, there would be scenes that I would skip because just why?
But how would she understand it as a movie in total? It's not really a movie in total.
No, stop trying to be funny. No one can see your facial expressions, so they don't know that you're trying to be funny. It's my turn to talk now.
It's my turn down here.
Yeah, so I say classic because it's survived so long and so many people, you just are connected with it by one line. All you have to do is say knee or whatever.
I hear you can't graduate college until you've seen this movie at least once.
You can't graduate college without knowing at least five quotes from it, at least from other. You don't have to see it, you just have to know the quotes.
Yeah. Okay.
And how have I graduated college? Am I still in college? Dang it.
I thought you saw it in middle school.
He'll be out.
Gosh. All right, Sharon, how about you? Classic or second class?
Well, classic.
Classic. Okay. Dun, dun,
dun. Surprise.
Yes. I was going to say how I rate a classic. It's basically how Paul and Josh rate classics. No! Excuse me. It's a classic. Let's leave it at that.
Okay.
I would show it to my friends in a heartbeat. I may need to remind them that drop their expectations at the door.
Just say, hey, this
just
is fun.
Just let's have a good time.
Yeah.
And here's your beer.
Here's your beer. Nice. Alrighty. Josh.
So let me start off by saying that I was, by my, you know, classifications, is it a classic movie? You know, mm-hmm. it's like, well, as a movie, you know, it's not, you know, it's not Citizen Kane, you know, like this great masterpiece. And
Citizen
as a comedy,
Kane isn't Citizen Kane.
What?
As a comedy, it has, you have different standards. You know, Airplane, like I said, has a more emotional, fulfilling kind of movie. And I wondered, gee, you know, I'm probably not going to enjoy this. It's going to be second class because I'm going to watch it beginning to end. But after watching it, I mean, I was laughing so hard. I know this movie beginning to end, you know, and everybody quotes it. Rewatching it, I'm laughing so hard. Some of the best cinematic comedy moments come from this movie, in my mm-hmm. opinion. For that alone, I have to give it a classic. And after it's sat with me for a while, looking back, I'm like, you know, that is a great comedy. So have to give it a classic.
Amen.
All right. We have classics all around so far. Paul, what say you?
So how I define a classic is if I had some of my peers over and they had never seen the movie and they wanted to put on a movie and were like, hey, should we watch this? I would say, culturally speaking, you have to see this movie at least once just so you know what people are talking about when they reference it.
Do you come across a lot of people day-to-day that are referencing this movie all the time?
Day-to-day depends on what circles I'm running around in.
Truth.
And, well, but, pop culture, I mean, it comes up and, like, people put it in the funniest places.
Exactly.
Even if it's just a nod or a wink, you know, you wouldn't even pick up on it unless you knew.
Right.
I'd say Princess Bride comes up in more pop culture.
I'm not
going to
argue what comes up more, but this
Let's
definitely
not
does
argue
come
about
up.
What comes up more?
Exactly. So I would have to, under those circumstances, I would have to rate this a classic.
All righty.
We all know what you're going to say.
Very good. All right. So that is four classics and. As Christy alluded to, yeah, I'm going to have to say Monty Python and the Holy Grail for me was a second class. Was a second class. Was a class. Very, almost the antithesis of what Josh said. Of what Josh said, where he said that he was laughing the whole time. I barely smiled through most of this movie. I mean, Chrissy remembers me chuckling at the beginning. I don't really remember that, but it was just...
Apparently it was traumatic for him. You should have seen him typing his hate list the whole movie he was typing.
It wasn't traumatic.
I hate this and I hate that.
I just...
Stupid movie.
It was a very joyless movie for me on the whole.
It was so joyless sitting next to your joylessness.
Oh, wow.
Oh, all y'all know I love my husband.
Yeah. I love each one. Yeah, I think the music at the end of the movie that goes on forever and ever and ever perfectly embodies the feeling overall for me that this is just a waste of my time.
Oh, I loved watching
you
watch
that. I just felt like
the
movie was just a waste of my time.
That was my favorite part of the whole movie. Wait, oh, second favorite.
I wanted to ask, how long did everybody stay for the end credits?
You mean the whole thing?
We watch the whole end credits?
I mean, I started with the organ music.
Yeah, the whole thing.
I stayed through the whole thing. I toughed it out. I'm like, is this going to end?
There were times where I was tempted. I was like, nope, I'm going to stick this through.
Well,
it's the repetitiveness of the organ music that makes it feel so much longer.
It's not really that long.
It's really not that long, yeah, but man.
That was my second favorite part of the whole movie. Really? The first one was when that movie, the fake movie, came on before the real movie.
Oh, yeah,
Francisco's like, wait, what? Hey, did we? And I really wanted to mess with him so bad. I wanted to be like, oh man, did I get the wrong DVD? But I couldn't. And then at the end, when the little organ music started playing, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. And he's sitting there and he's like glaring at the screen and like, what? What? And Is it still going? Where are the credits?
And you have to think, like, in 1975, they didn't have home video. They couldn't just turn it off. You would have to just leave the theater.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good point.
You, like, without leaving the theater without seeing a directed by or any sort of credits like that.
Yeah. I mean, they were playing with everyone's
That joke
lines.
Probably worked better in theaters, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what
in the intermission.
Where people might start getting up and, oh, it's back up.
All right. Well, according to the Retro Rewind podcast and our lovely, amazing, talented roundtable panel this time, we rate...
you can say it. You can do it.
We rate Mind Python and the Holy Grail a disputed classic.
Classic!
Yay!
And only I guess I should say barely disputed classic because I am
right.
the lone
you were
dissenter.
Stomped into the dust.
Oh, gosh.
Awesome.
Yay.
And there was much...
Much gnashing of teeth?
No.
No.
Oh.
Don't try and quote it.
It's just me.
It's too soon.
All right. Well, Alice, with that, let's get on to our new tube section.
New tube systems engaged.
All right. And to keep things quick, we're going to go around and just say essentially what's one thing that's new on our tubes and not even go into it, just what it is. Christy.
Parks and Recreation all the way up to current episode.
Cool.
Yes.
Paul.
Garbage.
Okay. Sharon.
Where the hell is Matt?
She's not asking that. That's a YouTube video.
Oh, okay. All right.
Hey, you're not supposed to go into it.
I have to clarify because that needs defending. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Josh.
The underrated gem of Ivan Reitman's 1993 comedy classic, Dave.
Woo!
Wow.
Can I redo mine?
Garbage.
Okay, Paul, instead of garbage, you chose?
Quiz Up.
Okay, cool. And then mine is Audrey Assad, a singer.
Don't right. go.
Okay. That's it. That's all I was going to say.
You don't even follow your own rules. Man, you have been incepted.
All right. Thank you. Wow.
Now go away before I taunt you a second time.
Let's move on to our contact and feedback section. Alice, bring up the communication satellites.
ComSat online. Receiving incoming transmission.
So, we have one comment from Ryan Jackson, or Jax Rye, from the Robin Hood episode. He said, good stuff. I enjoyed reliving this movie through you guys. I laughed when Paul mentioned the butt scene, speaking of which. I had heard a rumor that Kevin Costner had a stand-in for that scene. Also, if I may point out, the NES had an excellent game based on this movie. One I would play over and over, which is uncommon for that era for a video game based off a movie to be any good. I mention NES version of The Terminator?
No, mention that.
No, yeah. I never played that, but I played the Game Boy version. Not so good.
Mm.
Oh, also, Michael Kelso from the Retro Thought Pod emailed us back thanking us for mentioning him. You are welcome again, Michael. And he has recently released his first episode, so if you want to go check that out, they talk about just things they're thankful for because of Thanksgiving.
That one holiday.
What was that we just celebrated in the States? All right. If you want to check out where you can contact us, go to RetroRewindPodcast.com/contact. And if you'd like to find out where we are on social media, go to RetroRewindPodcast.com/social. I'd like to thank my lovely wife, Christy, so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon, also.
Thanks.
Of course. Thank you, Paul.
PaulJPowers.com.
And thank you all who listen to our 1 year anniversary of the Retro Rewind podcast.
Woohoo!
And like a Pokemon, we'll catch you later.
Retro Rewind mission complete. Proceed to Nat Point Omega and return to base.
Are you still catching them?
Oh, golly.